Technorama episode 386. 386? Where have I heard that number before? For October 9th, 2013. Obladi, oblada.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
I'm in the play, and I need to sound like I'm from London. Got any accents I can pick up?
Over there, in the media corner.
Jolly good.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts to disregard all safety rules. Here your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama for October 9th, 2013. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I am Chuck Tomasi, and with me as always is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm great, man, and I'm actually getting ready for Halloween.
Halloween, is that the holiday where you dress up in some crazy costume?
Yeah, it's actually all year for us.
I get that confused with Dragon Con.
That's right.
Which I happen to be wearing my Dragon Con t-shirt tonight, but nobody can see us because we're having a little technical difficulties with the stream, but we'll muster on.
Yes, I'll put in a support call to Google.
All right, speaking of, when you titled the show Obladi Oblada, I had to go back to last weekend when we watched a Indiana Jones marathon. We watched 1, 2, and 3. Couldn't find Crystal Skull anywhere, but hey, it is what it is. And we noticed that at the beginning of Temple of Doom, the name of the club, you know, when they fall through those canopies and go down in the car and Short Round picks them up,
right.
They drive away, they pass the club Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
Never saw some of this stuff before. But then again, I've never sat through Temple of Doom all the way before.
Did you watch it in Blu-ray or DVD?
I think it was DVD.
Okay.
Which is fine with me.
Even that's a step up from the old VHS we used to have. So you see all these things now.
Yeah, you can actually read them.
Yeah.
Coming up in this episode, we have Doctor Who news, ghosts need love too, and more lens flares than you can shake a lightsaber at. All that and more coming up right after this.
This is Richard Garriott.
Lord British.
Private Space Explorer. You're with Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
Chuck and Craig at Technorama.
34, 35, 36, 37. See? Prime number.
Yeah, very good. You're learning, young Padawan.
Oh, man. I had our feedback all stacked up here on Evernote, and I got a sorry error. We've encountered an error. The URL provided does not correspond to a valid shared note.
That's the best looking 404 page I've seen in a long time.
Have we actually got one of these? All right, we'll move on to what Mad Marv gave us. We do have some feedback, and I will dig it out at the break. Mad Marv has sent us news that the camo cosplayers, the people who were I don't know if you saw these at Dragon Con, but the Marriott carpet is this kind of blue and yellow pattern color, and some people decided to dress up as the carpet. They were camouflaged, so if they laid down, you could barely see them.
Yeah, even their guns were dressed up.
Yeah, it was until they moved, you almost didn't know they were there. You're just like, something's wrong with the carpet over there. Well, sometimes dressing up as your favorite superhero or cartoon character just isn't enough. So at Internet Culture Convention Dragon Con, which we love going to every year, cosplay often crosses the line into in-joke absurdity, like dressing up as a rug. One of this year's highlights was a pair of intrepid cosplayers who dressed up as the memorable psychedelic carpet at Dragon Con's Atlanta Marriott Hotel. It was a hit for everyone but the carpet designer, who threatened legal action when photos landed on Facebook. Nice. In the world.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
Go ahead.
In the world of cosplay, people don't generally expect to get in trouble for dressing up as well-known characters like Superman or Spock, even though the legal teams at DC Comics and Paramount could probably crush them like a bug.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the designers of the Marriott's pattern carpets didn't get the memo about turning a blind eye to cosplay tributes. Apparently, the carpet costumes were so popular that one of the original cosplayers offered a version of the Marriott carpet pattern for a presumably vast number of people who also wanted to dress up in carpet-themed camo gear. Seeing this, carpet designers Coruscant
and his buddy Tatooine
sent cosplay suppliers Vulpin Props a cease and desist letter. As Vulpin Props explained on their Facebook page today, of all the things to get a cease and desist letter over, of all the replicas I've made over the years, I've received one from the Coruscant Inc. designers of the Marriott Marquis Atlanta Hotel carpet. Spoonflower has pulled the design, as is their right. Hey, they're the people who did the fabric for the bow ties I made. Ping.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Spoonflower.
Oh, okay.
So, sorry everyone who wanted some fabric of their own. Yes. Yeah,
Go
ahead.
The article I read was that was what they were really ticked off about, is they were wanting to replicate this pattern and sell their own copies.
So what? They're not selling anything. Spoonflower is the only one making a dime here.
Yeah, no, I think they were going to make the costumes for other people, is what I'm saying, and resell the pattern, which that's why the designers were upset about.
Oh, because they designed this and they got paid by the Marriott, not enough?
Well, I imagine it wasn't just the Marriott. I'm sure this pattern's in other hotels. I don't know how that works, but I don't know. I thought it was funny. I think they should have played it really cool and did something with it rather than against it, you know?
That's it. I'm never buying anything from Coruscant Inc.
Okay. Cancel your orders now, boys and girls.
Gonna boycott them when I open up my new hotel.
Yeah. Go through the request for quotes. What? I know these people. Oh, yeah.
All right, let me pull up my mail feedback here real quick.
I did not see these people.
Did I see them? I don't know. They were camouflaged.
I was going to say, how would you know?
Not funny, Bob.
No, but it is pretty cool.
All right, let's see. Jack sends us a letter.
Way, I will give them credit for being original.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, we have letters.
Yay.
We just love playing this song.
Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day. Mailman, today. Reach right in and pull one out. Those letters. I love those letters.
Not let one out.
Oh, boy.
Mailman, oh, boy.
Yeah. Wow.
Letter from Jack Stevens. He writes, Chuck/Craig/Julie! I'm going to read every punctuation, okay?
No. Okay.
I'm catching up on the past episodes. Work has kept me very busy. Finally, writing the show. I've been meaning to do this ever since Chuck mentioned a solar-powered flashlight several years ago. Good memory. Better than mine.
Mm.
I've been trying to find one and have it sent to Chuck, but I think my wife threw it out.
Oh.
Big Lots used to sell them, but the battery just never held that much of a charge from the solar cells. Referencing the original version of Internet Explorer, I have a copy in storage in my garage. It wasn't from Microsoft. It was from a company called FTP Software. I recall this. Written for Windows 3.1 along with a TCP IP stack. I remember. I'm having flashbacks now.
I know.
With a TCP IP stack that could operate over a network card or dial-up, and was introduced to the market shortly after Bill Gates said that no one would have interest in the internet. I've got that newsletter as well. Pre-Windows 95. Microsoft acquired the company shortly after Bill made that statement. Yeah, that's about as good as 640K, right?
Yeah.
I need to get Grandma Grace, the nanogenarian geriatric geek. I love that title, by the way. He needs to get her on the birthday calendar for 6-6-1921, the record some, to record some promos for you, saying the same thing as Chuck's sister says. I just need to remember to have a voice recorder the next time I take her to take her grocery shopping. She doesn't drive, never has. Oh, she's like McCoy. She doesn't like the McCoy. Transporter.
Yeah.
She enjoys your shows, too. Woohoo! We got a nanogenarian listening to us. Happy birthday, Grandma Grace. We know we missed it in June, but happy birthday to you anyway. At least when her hearing aid batteries are fresh. Oh, so now we have to shout. Happy birthday, Grandma Grace!
Turn the volume up really loud.
Now, back to listening for shows. Thanks for doing those! Hey, that rhymes. Yay.
Yes, thank you, Jack, for calling or writing in.
That was awesome.
You know, I don't remember the browser so much, but I do remember installing the TCPIP stack.
That was nasty. It ate up memory, and memory was so precious on those old Windows 3.1 machines.
Hey, well, what's even worse is I remember installing the TCPIP stack on NetWare. So, you know, it was like, oh, we have IPX, and why would any, you know, I remember people asking me, why would you want to put IP on there? What's it's the next thing, you know, it's, you know, IPX is going away someday.
I never dealt with NetWare. Never, ever, 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 ever.
That's some... Network, our NetWare was,
oh, I know what it was. That was Novell's.
I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, in some ways it was, no, I was going to say it was similar to, but not equal to.
Well, as I understand, like, its directory services were ahead of its time, or ahead of Microsoft anyway.
Oh yeah, it was. You could do so much stuff managing your printers when Microsoft was just announcing AD. You know,
Net crazy. Share LPT1 whack server 1 whack printer 1.
Now, intuitive, I didn't say, but
no, I was giving you the Microsoft command.
Oh yeah, well, no, I'm just saying. Well, any of that stuff back in the day, it was a pain in the butt to share anything.
Yes, yes, it was. We have another feedback from Dean Jensen. It's simply subject.
Let me add a footnote there.
Oh, yes.
Back then, it was really easy to, or it was really difficult to share anything. Nowadays, you can get in trouble for sharing it because it's too easy.
Right. Well, you didn't have to worry about group policies back then either.
What's this drinking picture on Facebook? What?
No, T. Morris posted one of those embarrassing old pictures today.
Which one? The one where he was diving in
but no naked no no the... no the one where he's proposing to me at the Hilton in Vegas.
Oh, what was that he posted? It oh him and Philippa Ballantyne are celebrating their second anniversary, but he said the way he worded it, it sounded like you married her on the same day he did or something.
Right, because October 8th is Donna's and my 25th anniversary. It's also their second anniversary, so somehow it sounded like, you know, we were married the same time or something. Yeah. We share the same anniversary. The same
So anyway,
in memory of that, T posted a picture of him giving me the H2 that's right next to me recording this show. So thank you. T has contributed to Technorama again. Dean Jensen has contributed. We asked some question at some point. This is just titled Answer to Your Question. Hey, Chuck and Craig, been catching up on the podcast and just wanted to answer one of your questions. Yes.
Okay.
I'm glad thank we can help. I can only guess. I'm going to make a bold leap of faith that that is the answer to should we do more interviews? That's the only question we've asked in the last 6 months.
Yeah, that's good. I didn't think about that. You're right. You're probably right.
Let's do the history thing.
Okay.
On this day in history for October 9th, 2013. This is October 9th. It's the 282nd day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are only 83 more days remaining in 2013. It was nice. On this date in 1582, excuse me. Because of the implementation of the Gregorian calendar, which we aforementioned, this day does not exist this year in Italy, Poland, Portugal, and Spain.
Was it leap day for them? It was also on this date in 1604 that supernova 1604 was sighted. It was the most recent supernova to be observed in the Milky Way, and I mentioned supernova and 1604 twice.
What year was that, Craig?
4061.
Generators at Boulder Dam, later renamed Hoover Dam, begin generating electricity from the Colorado River and transmit it 266 miles to Los Angeles, California, today in 1936.
Hey, we've seen those in person. And 24 years ago today, an official news agency for the Soviet Union reports that reports of a landing of a UFO in Voronezh. Yeah, okay.
October 9th, 1992, a 13-kilogram fragment of the Peekskill meteorite lands in the driveway of the Knapp residence in, yes, Peekskill, New York. Maybe it was part of Supernova 1604. Destroying the family's 1980 Chevy Malibu. They should have called it the Malibu meteorite.
Yeah. And the last flight of the SR-71 was on this date and 14 years ago.
I should run down the basement and grab my plastic model of the SR-71 that I built when I was 12 years old.
Why don't you?
Today in 2003, Mission Space opens to the public at Epcot Park at Walt Disney World. Hey, I went on that not shortly after it was open. Didn't realize it was that recent. The opening ceremony included several astronauts from all eras of space exploration, including the future. I made that last part up.
And speaking of the future, in 2009, at one point it was the future, was the first lunar impact of the Centaur and L-Cross spacecrafts as part of NASA's Lunar Precursor Robotics Program.
Doesn't it seem like they just crashed that into the moon like a year ago?
Yeah, it seemed. I think it was another project.
That was 4 years ago already. Happy birthday goes out in this date to German mathematician, physicist, and physician Johann Andreas Senger. Born on this date in 1704.
And also born on this date in 1873, Carl Schwarzschild, the German physicist and astronomer.
Joseph Friedman, the inventor of the bendy straw, for which we're all grateful, was born 113 years ago today.
And actor Scott Bakula, Captain Archer, turns 59 today.
Director Guillermo del Toro turns 49.
And actor Chris Dowd, Roy, from one of our favorite shows, The IT Crowd, is 34.
We were just quoting that before we hit record because my printer, I kid you not, my printer, I put it on Facebook, you can go look. It said, turn off and on again.
There you go.
And actor Brandon Routh is also 34. And that's the way it was on this day in history for October 9th, 2013. We do so enjoy doing that. Yay. Best 3 minutes of my week.
That's right.
Let's play that one. Oh, that one doesn't want to play. Let's play that one.
Bad news, everyone.
Here's some bad news. The BSA tells the hacker scouts that you must change your name. Speaking of seasoned,
I'm kind of torn on this, to be honest with you, but sucks. Well, there was a group called Hacker Scouts, and they actually teach kids computer skills, with different kinds of programs. Anyway, the BSA got word of it and asked them to quit using the word scouts, because actually Congress, I think it said, had given them the word pretty much as a trademark.
That's, how can you trademark the scout word? I mean, then international vehicles would have to be sued, too, because they sell an international scout.
That's true. I think it was, I don't know how, I got to look into the law itself. Well, like, I really need to read it, but it says the term scouts is trademarked by the BSA via a 1919 congressional charter, and the charter extends to select groups like Girl Scouts as well. The BSA demanded that the Hacker Scouts change its name or face legal ramifications.
And here's a letter from, what's his name? Cook. It says, we know this will disappoint some of you. Cook is one of the guys for the Hacker Scouts. We know some of this will disappoint you. We know some of you wanted us to fight this. We don't blame you. We had those same feelings, but our job is to keep our organization focused on its mission. Our job is to make this kind of education as accessible and affordable as many kids as we can. It came down to, how does this further our goals and objectives? And it doesn't. So, you know, I think they took the mature route rather than fighting it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sad, but true. I mean, that again, like the carpet designer, we can't coexist. I mean, are they really harming the word scout? I mean, do we have to rewrite To Kill a Mockingbird now?
That's right. Well, actually, my first thought was the BSA has several different branches of scouts. You know, they have the Boy Scouts, which is what I'm associated with, but they have Venture Scouts, Sea Scouts. There's different groups, and they don't necessarily become Eagles or whatever, but they have they have certain training for certain things. I would have liked to see the BSA reach out and do something a little more positive with this and maybe folded it in, because I think computer skills are very valuable to people, my son included, me, you know, whoever, especially nowadays. And I think that they would have been better off trying to include them, or, I don't know, fold some of the things that they're doing. I don't know if it, you know, matches with the BSA's goals, but apparently not, because they asked them to rename it.
Do you think they also have the acronym, do you think they also have the initialization? Sorry, I almost said acronym, but I've been corrected recently that it's only an acronym if it spells a word, like scuba. Otherwise, it's an initialization.
Right.
Do you think they also own the initialization BSA?
Probably, because it's the initials for the group. It's on...
Well,
yeah,
I just
sure
did a quick Wikipedia of BSA, and if that were the case, mm-hmm. we would need to rename the Baltimore School for the Arts, the Bosnian Serb Army, the British School of Amsterdam, the Building Societies Association. We'd have to change the Broad Spectrum Antibiotic.
Well, I mean, it's part of their trademark, but I think it goes along with their logo, because I've seen shirts that say BSA, and I know they're very picky.
What about
their
the
logos.
BSA motorcycle manufacturer or the British Soap Awards?
British Soap Awards. Whoa!
Now we're treading on thin ice.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of torn because I like the BSA, but at the same time, I don't want to see them having a group like this having to change their name.
Well,
sucks.
They may have to.
Mm-hmm.
You just never know. You should do your research before you start naming things.
Well, I still think they could have done something a little more positive than, threaten somebody with a letter.
If they've had that brand for almost 100 years, I can kind of see it. You know, you want to protect mm-hmm. it. I mean, goodness
it's
knows
over
they have
years now.
They have they have enough problems with their brand as it is.
True that.
All right, let's move on to the next news story. We have researchers bioengineer bacteria that poops out gasoline. Yes, it's true, people. Mm. We now have a strain of E. coli that can produce a suitable substitute for gasoline, although it's in tiny, tiny quantities. So when the modified E. coli were fed glucose found in plants or other non-food crops, the enzymes they produced converted the sugar into fatty acids and then turned those into hydrocarbons that were chemically and structurally identical to those found in commercial fuel. Unfortunately, as the Wall Street Journal points out, 1 liter of glucose produces just 580 milligrams of gas, which is not a highly favorable yield.
Yeah.
So it's a start. It's a start.
You walk into the lab. Whoa, who did that? Oh, that's the Petri dish.
No, it's gasoline.
Yeah. Hey, I think I like it better when gasoline smells like French fries. The
biodiesel. No, that's when they burn the grease fuels, French fry
fuels. Biodiesel. Yeah.
In breaking news today, we found out that over 100 long-lost Doctor Who episodes were found by dedicated fans. Where, you ask? Nowhere else but Ethiopia.
I thought that was... You know what? Whenever I hear Ethiopia... Now, this is just my ignorance as a stupid American, but I always thought about how they needed food and all this kind of stuff. And here they are sitting on 100 episodes of Doctor Who.
They're hoping it'll take them... somewhere in space and time.
Yeah. somewhere where there's food.
A group of dedicated Doctor Who fans tracked down at least 100 long-lost episodes of the show gathering dust more than 3,000 miles away in Ethiopia. It was feared the BBC programs from the 1960s featured the first two Doctors, William Hartnell and Patrick Troughton, had vanished for all time after the Beeb flogged off a load of footage. But after months of detective work, the tapes
Justin Bieber or no. The BBC?
Beeb is in the BBC. Come on, get international okay. with me, Craig.
I gotcha.
We were looking for that British accent at the top of the show, but apparently it hasn't materialized yet. After months of detective work, the tapes have been unearthed in the Ethiopian Radio and Television Agency. All I can picture is a bunch of pirate tapes.
Yeah, they're just sitting on a shelf.
Somebody recorded them from a copy, from a copy, from a copy. Well, yeah, it's
got labels with like written with Sharpies.
Right. Yeah. The Television Insider said, it's a triumph and fans everywhere will be thrilled. This is a really big deal for the BBC and is set to make them millions from the sale of the DVDs. Maybe that's how they're going to feed the starving people.
You did it wrong. You got to put the pinky in the millions of dollars. Never mind.
All right. Well, that's good news. I'm glad they found those. Yeah. Now we can sell them on BBC.
That's right. And as a follow-up, they said that that is confirmed that they found all these episodes. They are being delivered back to the BBC. And I think later this week, the week that you'll be listening to this episode, that they're going to announce how you'll be able to watch them.
Excellent.
Probably on expensive DVDs or Blu-ray.
Very likely. Hey, normally we'd give a shout out to the chat room at this part of the show, but we are doing this on an off night. Something came up last Sunday night and we apologize for that. So Craig's going to have to really cram to get this out on Wednesday. We do have a few people in the chat room. I don't know what they're doing. And they're kind of mulling around in the corner over there.
What are they
doing?
But
we do have me and Captain Rootbeer, Fuffy Frog, Gru, Mad Marv, and the Giant. Almost sounds like the beginning of a Dr. Seuss story.
Yeah.
Speaking of stories, we have...
I'll chat in the tree.
Axe and stray stories!
Say, I'll chat in the tree, I'll chat in the train, I'll chat in the bus, and I'll...
and on a plane. Yeah. Where were we? Oh my, yeah. Well, you know how we have eHarmony and Match.com and all these. You know, there's a lot of people that meet their loved ones on the internet. Well, now, this animated GIF is kind of giving me the creeps because it keeps going in and out of focus. Have you seen
What's worse, it's Flash. It's not even a GIF.
Oh, okay. It is Flash. There is a website called ghostsingles.com. Free singles, free chat, free souls. Finally, a dating site. This is right from their homepage, by the way. Finally, a dating site for singles who know how to get a life. Well, an afterlife. Okay, maybe some sort of in-between, neither world, ethereal existence. But if you're looking for love and you're dead, Ghost Singles is the site for you. How do they log in?
I don't know. I guess
suddenly that phrase "ghost in the machine" has a whole new meaning. I'm thinking of that Police album from the 80s. We are spirits in the material world.
Yeah,
this is going every direction but the way. Please note: no marriages have ever been materialized from ghost signals. Singles. Relationships, sure, but seriously, have you ever tried getting a priest to solemnify your unholy union? So don't bank on finding your spouse, just your match for eternity. Chat, date, and have fun with other post-life singles.
Hey, I'm surprised they don't have, like, you know, up in the top it says, I'm a male ghost or a female ghost. What'd be cool is if they had a male, female, and then a male, female, or female ghost. So that way you could, like, apply to get a, like, an invisible friend.
Do ghosts even have gender? I mean, when you get down to existentialism, is there a gender for ghosts?
I don't know.
I'm just saying.
All the ghosts I had that saw that had didn't have legs. They were kind of like, you know, free-floating there at the bottom, like a little tail. So, I don't know.
Huh? All the cherubs that I've seen don't have any parts.
We did see, Dan Aykroyd kind of got freaky with one.
How do you pay for this stuff? I mean, they don't take credit cards, do they?
Ghost coins.
Ghost. It's better than Bitcoin. It's spirit ghost money.
Hey, by the way, they do. It is pretty wide open. Anywhere from 1,000+ years old all the way down to 18. So.
Oh, really? You can enter your age in there. That's lovely.
Yeah. So if you're a ghost and you're 18, you're legal.
Sorry, zombies not allowed.
I like how on the search now it says you're looking for somebody who died horribly, mysteriously, tragically, or suddenly.
Peacefully. Is peacefully a choice?
Is not.
I just want to go like Grandpa in his sleep, not screaming like the people in the back seat.
The success story of the week. Thank you, singles. You helped us find each other. Beware. That's what.
Maybe we should have saved that story for a Halloween show. Nah.
Oh, that's funny.
Our other Hacks and Strange story is that there is now a new space beer made with actual moon dust. Yes. Here's a way to numb the pain of fulfilling your astronautical dreams and do you one better in the process. Drink this beer actually made from moon dust. You get to gulp down real, honest to God, beer-soaked moon bits and become one with the moon in the most literal sense possible. After teaming up with ILC Dover, the company that designs and produces NASA's very own spacesuits, Dogfish Head Brewery, which I'm acquainted with, got their fair share of dust made from crushed lunar meteorites and steeped them in a rich, malty Oktoberfest.
And this can't be good.
It doesn't just sound awesome. The dust is made up mostly of minerals and salts, so it helps the fermentation process and actually lends to the flavor, giving it a, quote, subtle but complex earthiness. I think that's totally wrong if you're crushing
up lunar. They did get that it came from the moon, right?
I would have thought it was subtle but complex lunarness or something.
Well, I think the moon did come from the earth, so.
ILC Dover didn't just stop at space beer, though. They even gave the Dogfish Head team a set of 10 koozies made from the same material that they make their spacesuits out of. So, should it somehow become possible to down a few brews in the vacuum of space, these little koozies will do just fine withstanding everything from +250 to -250 Fahrenheit temperatures to micrometeoroids going 10 miles per second to solar radiation. So, yes! That orthofabric will keep your beer very cold. It's very cold in space.
Yeah. Well, that's the way you want your beer.
Only Americans. Let's not generalize.
You know, I know how they can sneak this beer up into space, like on the International Space Station. You know how I saw in a magazine, I think I've talked about it here before, in one of those things it's called a beer belly, and you put it on under your shirt and you put beer in it. So you can go into events and drink it. They should put that in the spacesuit.
You know,
boy, you put on a couple of weights there, Buzz.
Buzz, nice name, Buzz. Maybe that's where Buzz got his nickname.
Yeah,
Buzz Aldrin, Buzz Lightbeer, Buzz. Oh my,
light beer.
What would a beer buzz feel like in 0G?
I don't know, but I did have a beer after my last 5K, which went straight to my head.
While we're on the topic of beer, I was flipping channels this morning and I heard on NPR that I think it was government, Congress, somebody was trying to tell bars and other establishments who were selling, quote, pints of beer, which aren't really pints, that they either have to up the glass size from 12 to 14 up to 16 ounce pints or stop calling them pints and maybe call them something else.
Well, a pint is a unit of measurement.
Yes, it is. It right. And of course, the purveyors were saying, well, we're using pint in a general sense. Like, yeah, so you can get 20% more money for less material. Yeah. So,
Hey,
I wouldn't mind if they came in pints again.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
It would. But until then, if they want some names, we're here for you, listener. We want to know.
A beer by the pound.
Send your comments to technorama@chuckchat.com.
This lesser size needs a name. What should we call it? I just happen to think we should call it, you know, this sounded like a beer kind of term, and don't let this go to your head, Craig, but I was thinking a Craig of beer would sound like a good name for that.
Yes.
Doesn't that have a European sound to it? You could even spell it with a K and get royalties off of that.
I'm down for that. Let's do that.
I was going to call it a Chuck, but I didn't think anybody wanted to hear, you know, anything about up Chuck in the bar.
Yeah. No. Chuck, what?
When?
Hey, which is more, a pound or a pint?
One's a fluid measurement. It's kind of like asking what's more, an ounce or an ounce?
Pound of water?
The English system is stupid.
Let's go back to metric.
How many pints are in a pound?
Let's move on to listener birthdays. We've got several. Today, two of them, as a matter of fact. Itsuko Rumpke. Sounds like Itsuko. I love the phonetic spelling. We're back to that time of year, aren't we? We also have Mario from New Jersey. Happy birthday to both of you. October 10th, two birthdays. Our friend Victor Cahiao, former podcaster and new media guy. And Garrett Rafal. October 11th, Bruce Barr. We haven't heard from Bruce in a long time.
No, and I'm very disappointed. So let's just leave it right there.
Yeah, happy birthday, Bruce. We send us a thank you note, an audio thank you note or something.
Yeah, you got to check in to, you know, reset the time.
And October 13th is Jason Schwanz. If it's your birthday, happy birthday to you. If it's not, go to the show notes or go to Technorama's wiki page at chuckchat.com/wiki. Add your name. And we will give
happy
you a shout
somebody out else's birthday to you.
Yes, it's my daughter Lisa's birthday on the 9th also. She's actually 18 years old.
You know what? I knew that because Facebook told me so.
Facebook knows all.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me every morning that it's somebody's birthday somewhere. Sometimes there's seven somebodies.
I think they're going to rename Facebook to the Borg.
No, that's Google's job.
Yeah, Google's working on that too.
And I gave her an Android tablet for her birthday, and she was very happy with that.
Oh, what'd you get her?
It was a freebie no-name brand thing that we got free for signing up for membership for something else.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cheapskate.
Hey, she likes it. That's the important thing. She's got a nice little 7-inch Android tablet that she's using. She likes it.
I'm just picking. That's cool.
Yeah. I was going to keep it if she didn't like it, because I kind of liked it too.
I've got a Nexus 7. I love the form factor.
It has, what version of Android is 4.2? 4.3?
Jelly Bean.
Is it?
Oh, yeah, Ice Cream Sandwich.
Ice Cream Sandwich. So, you know, it's not that old. I mean, it's not
Jelly Bean. Never mind. No. Jelly Bean. Excuse me.
It's not like they gave us Dunkin' Donut or whatever the other one was. Chocolate Chip. Can't remember the old names.
Hey, you have to admit, the names are more appealing than iOS 7 or 6.
I don't know. I think Maverick's kind of a cool name.
The next name for Android is KitKat.
Yeah, I heard that. So, doesn't do any good if you eat all four KitKats at the same time.
Yeah. Is that how you're supposed to eat them?
That's right. Let's do the remember when thing. It seems that way back in 1964, artificial intelligence pioneer Dr. Arthur L. Samuel, not to be confused with Samuel L. Jackson, wrote an article for The New Scientist titled The Banishment of Paperwork that imagined what the networked computer landscape may look like by the year 1984, sans George Orwell. Samuel predicted movies on demand, government control over what information might be accessed, and the death of the Dead Tree Library. He got a lot right. Samuel was just a bit optimistic about the timeline.
from The World in 1984, Volume 1, edited by Nigel Calder. Connection to a central location will be very necessary to perform another function, which will, by then, be delegated to the omnipresent computer. That would be Google. I refer to information retrieval, the entire contents of large central files, or at least that portion which the government elects to make available. You got the government control right.
Yeah.
Will readily be retrievable by anyone at a moment's notice. One will be able to browse through, I love the term, through the fiction section of the central library, enjoy an evening's light entertainment viewing any movie, well, any movie that they'll license. Can I get that streaming or do I have to get that on media?
Yeah.
Or inquire as the previous day's production figures for Tin in Bolivia.
What would have been funnier is if he had named a country that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. Soviet Union.
So he's got, for 1964, this is before, now keep in mind, people, this is before the internet was even born. Before the ARPANET, which was the precursor, was born.
Yeah, really, he's about 30, almost 30 years off.
30? He's like 40 years off.
Well, no, not quite. 1984 to now is 29 years. So,
with the movie streaming.
With the movie streaming, the government control, just thinking about from 84 to now, he pretty much nailed it.
Still don't have our flying cars.
Yep. Oh, well. Maybe one day.
And then we'll get into the Wayback Machine. But speaking of the Wayback Machine, we're still in Remember When. Timothy Leary developed video games found in New York Public Library Archive.
I'm sorry. This was too funny. Or not funny, but too amazing to pass up. I had to throw this in here.
The New York Public Library recently discovered a treasure trove of video games in its archive created by psychedelic evangelist Timothy Leary. Over 375 floppies. Yeah. Hey, I got some of those right over there.
Yeah.
Containing a dozen or so games developed by the LSD advocate of the 80s. Some are playable via emulation. And now on display in the library's Rare Books and Manuscripts division, according to the New York Times. The Good Doctor's digital works had a self-help bend to them, advocating self-improvement by interactive means as opposed to pharmaceuticals, and apparently recreational drugs as well. If you fancy yourself a cyberpunk, Leary had an in-progress project based on William Gibson's Neuromancer, replete with writing by William S. Burroughs and a soundtrack by none other than Devo. He had more than just prototypes, too. His Mind Mirror was commercially released in 1985 and sold 65,000 copies for publisher Electronic Arts. Hey, not a big seller there.
I'm trying to remember Mind Mirror. I don't
remember that either. If you can't make it to NYPL, a version has been adapted to Facebook so you can glean your personality profile from your profile.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, and he's sitting there in front of an old IBM PC with a color monitor.
Yeah, that's funny. I didn't, and you know, I always knew of him and his and the LSD stuff, but I never thought about it. What the heck? It came to me. You know, I'm still programming.
You know, I was just thinking about old dot matrix printers today. What are the license plate numbers and letter sequences in South Carolina?
On a license plate?
Yeah.
It's three.
Three digits, then three letters? Or is it the other way around?
No, I would say, it's numbers, then letters. Yeah.
Ours are three numbers, then three letters. And I always get things like, you know, 468 LBS, and I think, 468 pounds, right?
Right.
Well, I followed one today that said 460 CPS. Now,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
What do you think of when you see CPS?
CPU?
No.
Speed? What?
Characters per second.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly what I think.
That's what made me think of the dot matrix printers. I thought, nobody uses that term anymore. How many characters per second is that laser printer?
I've had some downloads that I thought was coming down a character per second.
No, that was bits per second.
Yeah. Well, by the way, South Carolina is letters, then numbers.
I think Michigan is or used to be letters first, too. So, yeah, I had a flashback on the highway today.
Do you still have the podcast license plate?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
8 years now.
That's right. You got it when we started Technorama.
Right away. Yeah, the screws are getting really, really rusty, but it's still on the vehicle.
As long as it hangs on.
I have to have front and back plates in Wisconsin.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Just rear here.
I'm going to let that one go.
Yeah, let it go.
Let it go. We're going to go on to J.J. Abrams in the media corner. Did we have a media corner? All right, we'll play that real quick. There, that's all you get. J.J. Yeah. Abrams apologizes for all those Star Trek lens flares. And here's the most insane part. Abrams had to have ILM remove lens flares from Star Trek Into Darkness in post-production because even he thought there were too many.
You know, can you imagine, I mean, I know they do, you can do some amazing things with special effects, but can you imagine the guy they came to and they said, look, you got to remove some of this lighting. Oh, you what? You know, can you imagine the guy trying to, fathom the job.
Of digitally removing them?
Yeah, flares, because they go across the whole frame. You know, but you look, there's a streak going across the whole frame.
Yep.
And sometimes it's more than one.
Yep.
And diagonal. At least the one I'm looking here with Chris Pine, and it's got a big old bright light right in your face.
And there's a diagonal component to it.
Yeah. And it's washing out the character.
Yep.
You know, on a little bit there. So can you imagine? That's got to be a pain in the butt.
Yes. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Here's a quote from... that he gave to Crave Online. I know I get a lot of grief for that, but I tell you, there are times when I'm working on a shot, I think, oh, this would be really cool with a lens flare. But I know it's too much, and I apologize. I'm so aware of it now. I was showing my wife an early cut of Star Trek Into Darkness, and there was one scene where she was literally like, I just can't see what's going on. I don't understand what that is. And I was like, yeah, I went too nuts on this.
Yeah.
If your wife can't stand it.
Well, you know, I think the way he used the lens flares, I think it added to the visual effect of this movie positively. But yes, I think there were a little too much.
In spots, you know, where you want to show the new ship. I think it, you know, kind of adds that shiny factor.
Mm-hmm.
But that should have been it. That should have been the extent of it.
Yeah, maybe here and there. Yeah, they should have could have totally toned it down a lot. But I did like the effect. But I agree there were times it was like, wow, a little much, you know. But so anyway. Hey, by the way, speaking of Star Trek.
Yes.
I saw an article where Fox News has updated their newsroom, and they have these guys working on these huge 50-inch panels. So it looks like a room.
I did see that. They were like 55-inch iPads.
Yeah, but they're not. I think they're actually Windows, like Windows 8, because I saw the Metro.
They're huge. They look like drafting tables, for God's sake.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is I watched the clip with Shepard Smith, and he was explaining what they were doing. And I get what they're doing. They're trying to get in some of the tweets and stuff that come in fast and furious and, you know, during breaking news and, you know, corroborate them and vet them out a little bit. But the thing is, the guys are sitting there on these 50-inch monitors that are sitting there right in front of them, and they're using like an iPad, like a touch screen. But the problem is the interface is not scaled down. It's still huge.
Oh, nice.
So it looks like a mobile version of Twitter or something like that, but scale up. So the tweets are still about as big as your head. So I'm like, what? You think it'd be a little more efficient to have more information on there?
Right.
I don't know. But I think it's a cool idea what they're trying to do, but I don't know.
They have visually impaired newscasters, so you have to be able to see that 800-point font.
Yeah, that's about right. Go watch the video if you get a chance.
I saw still pictures of it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of, like I said, it's neat. I see what they're trying to do. They're trying to capture that social media and the news, which I think probably needs to happen to a degree, because everybody tries to CNN's notorious about throwing out details half baked, you know, because it's coming in through the wire, which is Twitter. You know, so anyway.
Yep. Hey, Craig, you know what? We're running a bit long, so I say we save these book reviews for the next show.
Why don't you just mention what you're
all right. I just finished Benjamin Franklin, An American Life, written by Walter Isaacson, same guy who did the Steve Jobs biography. I liked it.
Okay.
He was like America's early geek, but he had more than the geek streak. Mm. There, it just a fascinating, fascinating guy. And now I've started reading Wizard, The Life and Times of Nikola Tesla. So, you know, he was almost erased from history. He just kind of faded into obscurity. And only now has he made a recent resurgence, which is why there's a whole bunch of books about him. But I'm enjoying those very much.
I started reading Foundation from Isaac Asimov, which is pretty good. It deals with mathematics and psychohistory, which is kind of neat. Have you ever read that?
No, I have not.
Okay. You might want to put that on your list. That sounds like something right up your alley. And this last weekend, Kim and I saw World War Z.
What did you think?
I enjoyed it. I'm not familiar with the book, so I can't say, oh, it wasn't like the book and da da da. But I will say it was fun. There was a couple of BS moments, you know.
But yeah, they certainly changed the whole zombie profile in that movie.
You know what? I think it kind of worked for the best.
Yep.
I like them lumbering, but at the same time, they were so fast and furious. They were just scrambling. It was crazy. I thought it really added to it.
I liked it.
Yeah. Good movie.
All righty. So that's our geek library. If you want to read or watch any of those. Oh, speaking of Asimov, what's the name of the Honda robot that stands on two legs and walks?
Oh, what is the Asimov?
The V off of Asimov, and what is its spell?
Oh, Asimo. That's right.
Yeah. Did you ever notice that before?
I did not.
Most people will say Asimo, but put a V on there and you got Asimov, which I think is kind of poetic.
I ignored it just like you did Obi-Wan in Indiana Jones.
The Club Obi-Wan. And on that note, we're going to take you to the end of the show. We appreciate you listening. We appreciate your support. If you like it, give us a call on the listener line, 206-222-CHAT, or leave us an obscure email answer. Yes. technorama@chuckchat.com. We're also on Twitter and all the other social networks that you can find on the homepage. We'd love to hear from you there. Links are on the homepage, chuckchat.com. Click on Technorama. And thank you. Once again, we'd like to thank our generous donors to the tip jar. There's a little donate button, and some people have found it in the generosity of their heart to give up half a cup of coffee a month to be part of our community and support the bandwidth and everything. Thank you very much. They're still helping out a great deal. Thanks to Manmar for the blog content and the Facebook posts and all that other good stuff that he puts out there. Thanks to the people who send us links during the week, and for the people who generally hang out with us in the chat room whenever we land on the right night and travel doesn't come up and whatever else. So, till next time, tell a friend about Technorama, and as always, a binary high five.
101!
And that's how you make the sausage.